people don't understand why I'm sad, or they think they do, and then they quickly forget who I am, who my people are. So I found in the last few days that people don't understand why I'm so upset with what happened in Orlando. So I'd like to shed some light on the topic for those who wonder why I'm so sad. First, here are some questions I'd like to pose to you all. When did you last feel unsafe going out for happy hour drinks at a bar after work? When did you last feel unsafe holding your lover's hand as you walk down the street? When did you last feel unsafe when you said I love you to your significant other in public? Being out and openly gay automatically buckets me into a targeted category that puts my well-being and safety at risk and forces me to put a certain lens on the world and how I interact with others around me. To put this into perspective, please allow me to answer these questions through my lens, my everyday lens. When did you last feel unsafe going out for happy hour drinks at a bar after work? Often. Even living in a relatively liberal city like Boston, I hear the general homophobic rhetoric that spews from the mouths of the uneducated, sometimes educated, and intolerant people. Fag, queer, homo, that's so gay. These are words and phrases that have become so normal in the vernacular of the people I find myself around when I'm in these settings. Do I feel unsafe? Of course I do. I mean, do I feel unsafe when I'm at a bar leaning against my life partner, Andrew? Of course I do. But I do it anyway, because sometimes the only safety I feel is my partner's warmth and love. When did you last feel unsafe holding your lover's hand as you walk down the street? Every single time. I find myself hyper aware of my surroundings when we're holding hands. Don't get me wrong, we get looks of love and even comments like, you guys are so cute, from people, but the negative feedback often outweighs the positive. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at people shaking their heads in disgust at us. You see parents pulling their children closer. When did you last feel unsafe when you said I love you to your significant other in public? We say this often when we part ways in public. Do people hear us? Probably. Do I wonder what others are thinking? Of course. Have I said it quieter to not bring attention upon us? Usually. Have I said it louder to bring attention to us? Sometimes. It's incalculable the number of times I have to think about these things in a day. It's exhausting. To have your brain firing at such a speed when you're just living your normal life is draining. Think of it like breathing. You don't think about it, but it's always there. These questions are just like taking a breath, constantly on my mind. And to tie it back to why I'm so sad about what has happened, gay bars are a sanctuary from the day-to-day. These are places we go to feel safe. These are places we know we can show our affection for our lovers, our friends, and our family. These are places where we don't feel hate and intolerance, where we don't see looks of disgust, disappointment, and where we can release the blanket of fear. After seeing the bloodshed in Orlando and seeing a house of safety for us in the LGBTQ community to be attacked, where do we feel safe now? Where can we be ourselves? Where can we exist without peers, with our peers without fear of attack? This event has shaken me to the core, and I find myself crying at times when I should be focusing on other tasks. So, please take the time to pause. Reflect on what you say or what your actions are. Think about the emotional turmoil and baggage we as LGBTQ folks carry around when we just want to hug our lover in public, kiss our lover in public, hold hands with our lover in public, be free to be who we are in public. Any sense of safety that I felt before has been revoked, and this is why I'm sad. This is why I weep. right now, I don't want to talk about gun control. I don't want to talk about legislation. I want to take time to think about the lives lost, the lives of my LGBTQ sisters and brothers. In closing, take the time to hug your gay best friend, your gay coworker, your gay son, your gay daughter, your gay father, your gay mother. Take the time to just love each other and realize there's still a lot of work for us to do. I'm blessed to be in a community of people and friends that touch me in ways every day that leave me speechless at times, and I'm fortunate to have a wide demographic of ages in my friends group, and to hear those that are in their 60s and 70s say, our work was done in the 80s and the 70s. You guys weren't supposed to experience this. Shows that we still have much to do. Thank you.
Last Sunday morning, I was in Minneapolis at my sister's house. My brother-in-law, who spends a lot of time in his professional life thinking about racism, was making coffee when I picked up my iPhone and saw the headline. "Looks like there's been another shooting," I said. "People are shot every day," said my brother-in-law reflexively. "Only a couple make the headlines." As I swiped through the first paragraph of the story, my first thought was, please don't let the shooter be Muslim. My mind flashed to a conversation from the previous week with a young Pakistani man who drove me through central England. He was fasting for Ramadan, so incredibly sincere, so devout. He spoke openly with me about his feeling of isolation as an immigrant to Great Britain, excluded from so many formal and informal relationships in his new country, which seemed to revolve almost always around alcohol. As I listened, I began to see what righteousness looked like through his eyes. He told me stories of hospitality and humility and justice. About 15 minutes before I reached my destination, after 2 hours with him, he asked if I had ever had the opportunity to hear the Quran sung. He put in a CD, and the familiar yearning, carried by unfamiliar words and unfamiliar melodies, transformed that taxi into a holy place. And then I learned that the gunman had opened fire in a gay nightclub. Why not? I thought. A movie theater in Colorado, a university campus in Virginia, a health department in California, an elementary school in Connecticut, a South Carolina church, Boston Marathon. Why not a gay bar in Orlando? On Monday, I walked into the village to get ice cream with Alta, my life partner, and Amos, our 11-year-old son. Amos's friend Julian joined us along the way with one of his dads. In the 70s, Julian's dad said, as we walked, 30-some people died in a gay club in New Orleans when someone set fire to it. Nobody was ever prosecuted, and many victims weren't even identified or buried because of who they were. It's strange, perhaps, to see in this tragedy the long arc of history bending toward justice. But just look at the pouring out of love and support for the dead and wounded gay men and women and their families in Orlando. In some ways, though, I didn't really become a part of the story until people started speculating that maybe Omar Martine, the shooter, was gay, or at least embarked in trying to figure out where he was on that journey. What do you do when you can't put the pieces of your life together in the way you thought you knew they were supposed to fit, in the way you thought you knew God wanted them to fit together? That's a journey I know. I walked that road for many years. But I was blessed with so many traveling mercies, my family and friends and mentors and in whose footsteps I could walk, my faith and so many faith communities, including this one, that made it safe for me to figure out who I am. My very time and place on the planet has has made it safe for me. It could have been otherwise. Dear God, rain your mercy on fires of self-hatred wherever they rage. People of good faith, let us carry water for one another.
God alone is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. My heart broke again this week, as did so many other hearts. It is my prayer that they have been broken open to allow the light of God in even further, even more deeply, even more firmly. In 1974, some 42 years ago, I met my life partner and now husband, George Pellucci. We forged our relationship of love and commitment and hope, defying the forces that would tear us apart within and without, forces that demanded us to keep secrets, stay hidden, and for God's sake, don't be so out about your sexuality and your love. Both the church for me and the army for George were the most unlikely places to be serving in the world. Institutions with deep homophobic roots that felt like tentacles binding us, or nooses ready to be pulled tight without warning in the middle of the night. Oh yes, there was Stonewall and resistance and marches and parades, and I was called to help write the open and affirming task force for the UCC. There were voices crying out for justice and equality all around us. And then the AIDS epidemic struck, and friend after friend after friend after friend died in our arms. We all came together in previously unimaginable ways to stitch together comforting quilts made from the cast-off experiences and the good-for-nothing rags of people who had been thrown out of churches, out of the army, out of families, out of communities. And yet, the fire of hope was kindled in the ashes of our unspeakable losses. The light of faith and love rose from the shadows of our broken dreams. This very place, this sanctuary, was a miracle. When we came here first in 1989 to pray with the AIDS Healing Prayer Group, we found a place that received us as we were. And the entire first year of coming here to worship, my tears fell through every service, releasing the pain of all the lost years of abandonment and rejection and fear and hopelessness. And there was a little joke between George and me. Every morning when we would leave the house, George would say, "Now, did you remember your handkerchief? Or is this going to be a two-handkerchief Sunday?" But all the grief, the anguish of having never been allowed to be whole individually or whole as a couple needed expression. And the healing power of the naming of the inclusion of gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgendered people from the pulpit in the songs, the prayers, and the life of the whole church was overwhelming. God was freeing us from a past that we could not change and opening us to a future in which we could be changed. Changed into knowing and feeling and understanding in body, mind, and spirit that we are all beloved creatures of God, and God delights in us all. And then changed into being bearers of that light and love to repair the world so it can hold all that love. And now, Orlando. So far to go. So little ground covered. So deeply divided our country. So deeply divided ourselves. God is calling us to use our gifts of grace received to move with courage and hope into the world so broken, so hurting, so violent. And to follow Jesus, we must embody a fierce and tender and at times harsh and dreadful love. It will take us to places we had never imagined. You see, we are one family on one little planet, trying to learn how can we love one another. We must lay down our weapons of our stones and build bridges instead. You see, God's unconditional love is a disarming love. How disarming when we fall in love and when love is given to us without justification, without earning it, just pure grace. How disarming. My usual armaments about them, they are the guilty, they are the problem, they are the reason, they all fall away. The cancer grows in my spiritual life. It would be the one that puts others in the guilty seat. That way I won't have to sit there with them and wait for God's mercy alone. Knowing that mercy is the gift we all most need, the gift that God gives us every time we come before God, truly as we are. May Orlando wake us from the sleep of privilege that we may have fallen into, privilege of a place where we can be safe or feel like we are, privilege of a place where we've done our part, we're fine. We've fallen asleep. Will God wake us up? There are ways we must stop projecting out the things we need to carry ourselves. May we not rest until every one of God's creations knows their belovedness and lives into the disarming love of God. For darkness will not drive out darkness, Martin Luther King Jr. has reminded us. Only light can do that. And Jesus told us, you are the light of the world. Amen.
When I wear my most beautiful dress, sometimes I get random compliments from total strangers, but sometimes I get looks. You know the kind, the disapproving, reproachful kind of looks. And I've learned to not only ignore these leering glances, but to give my body an extra flaunt and say, bring it on, and go ahead and stare. When my girlfriend and I walk down Boylston Street, hand in hand on a busy Thursday night, when she and I kiss each other in a crowded Back Bay station, again, the looks, both the what a cute couple looks and the what a couple is that looks. And at that, I give her an extra peck as if to say, that's right, and go ahead and stare. I felt lucky, oh so lucky, to have what I have. And I haven't let anyone else diminish that until now. Why now think twice before taking that dress out of the closet, put it back, choose slacks and a shirt instead? Well, I think twice before I simply take her hand on the sidewalk, never mind kissing her in public, frightened, scared for her safety over my own. Well, I change my behavior. If I change, then do, as they often say, the haters win. But if I don't change, and we are met with homo-transphobic violence, well, who wins then? Suddenly, it feels like 20 years ago, and the world is a big, scary place. big, scary, and feeling as if without room for us, those who dress and live and love differently.
My instant reaction to Orlando was shocked numbness. Another mass shooting, another automatic weapon, more madness, American style. That it was a gay nightclub and specifically targeted out of gay hatred took a few breaths to absorb. I'm old enough, 56, to remember my coming of age, including sure knowledge of my own sexuality, in the 1970s, when any sense of positive LGBT identity was pervasively, often violently kept invisible to the broader world. I was mocked and beaten up in junior high. Faggot was a word constantly spit in my face. I lived in terror that the truth would be made visible, and so stuffed all this deep down. Then the AIDS years, many friends died. The pipeline of serious illness to death and memorial service became numbing, much like the constancy of mass shootings is now so numbing. But something amazing happened. The crisis forced visibility. Societally, ACT UP and other organizations forced the criminally invisibility-keeping Reagan administration to see, name the truth, and, damn it, act. More personally, I witnessed family member after family member forced to acknowledge their son's gayness to deal at all with the truth of what was happening, in sickness, or sometimes in the choice whether to attend the memorial service at all. The lesbians rallied in amazingly powerful ways. As a community, we insisted not only on our visibility, but on making meaning of this carnage by fully connecting and integrating with the broader world. I believe this AIDS-related visibility was the start of the rapid changes in societal acceptance LGBT people enjoy here in Massachusetts, and particularly celebrate here at Old South. My husband Tim and I were married here in July 2011. We have thrived in a community so beyond tolerance, a body of Christ so truly loving that we have not felt the need to participate in the LGBT group activities that Anthony organizes so well. We even joked when John was hired, can Old South actually hire a straight white male? Is that too radical? The massacre in Orlando exploded that pleasant bubble, and I am heartsick. The litany of names and ages is devastating. I remember the freedom of gay dance clubs with joy. That I can identify with being at a place like Pulse makes the mental picture of what happened more than I can bear. I am backlashed into LGBT-specific identity. I must honor that so many gay people, so many gay people of color, so many gay Latin people were slaughtered because they were gay. Tim and I attended Thursday's jazz worship and party for Orlando. As we left, he said that communion had special meaning for him that night, with its broken body and blood hearkening to the broken bodies and blood we first learned about last Sunday morning. He added, we celebrate Christ's body and blood as a church fundamentally to memorialize, to make meaning out of Jesus' death. He wondered, what will we do as a community, a nation, a world to make meaning out of Orlando's broken bodies and all that? So, church,
What will we do to make meaning out of those 49 fun-seeking gay people? But Old South has taught me a final question. What will we do to make meaning out of those 50 people? Just as our bell tolled 5 times after the Marathon bombing to include the brother who died in the Watertown shootout, we must also embrace the 50 who died and somehow include the shooter in our hearts. That particularly Christian challenge of forgiveness and love, I submit, is a terrifyingly hard place to start making meaning out of what happened.